Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, people.
Justin Robert Young.
Hello, beautiful people. I still think you're beautiful.
Oh, I stopped, you know what? We forgot.
That's the only reason I said that, because I stopped thinking everyone was beautiful. It occurred to me that was a shallow worldview I have, and I left it behind, and then you picked it up and adopted it and made it part of your identity.
Can I say, Brian, we forgot. I'm sorry to interrupt you guys. We forgot on Weird Things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Justin's birthday.
Dude, yesterday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, bro. I heard they threw together a secret shindig, a surprise party, as it were, and I had intended to come out but did not make it because I got sick, but it sounds like everyone had a really good time.
It was amazing. It was great, and I want to thank my wife and everybody that came out. It was super fun.
Very cool. Happy birthday, man.
Thank you. It's 34. 34 years old now.
I've known you more than half your life now.
That's a fact, man. That is an absolute fact. Think for the better, right? You know, added everything up for the better.
That was a surreal trip to realize. You guys...
19 years.
Yes. Well, no. Sorry. I'm thinking of a couple of different things. It's surreal to think about because Justin was introduced to my life in 2008 was when we connected. But all three of us were in the same place at the same time at the amazing meeting the first time I went. And when I just saw Andrew as a presenter and I was just a quiet nobody in the ballroom, he gave a presentation and I found it online and there was this amazing moment. Like I'm like, just like, oh my God, I was in the audience for this. I remember this. And there's this moment that you specifically stop to call out Justin Robert Young out in the audience somewhere.
You there, stop fidgeting.
No. Like what a surreal thing to know that 5 years before or 6 years, half a decade before there was the three of us, the three of us happened to be in the same place at the same time.
I'm just terrified of the fact that like in a year, I'll have known Justin for 20 years.
Two decades
of excellence.
Hey, you know what? That actually is a pretty good segue to lead into, because one of the things we do on the show is talk about the creative process and what it's like to be a creative. We have talked about how in my story, there was a time I wanted to quit my day job. And as I've said before, what I wanted to do is just get magic out of my system, you know, so I wouldn't be the kind of bitter bastard that spent his whole life wondering what might have been. And it was really the fact that I was lucky enough to be married to Bonnie, and Bonnie said, "You got 1 year. I'll keep the lights on for 1 year, and let's see where it goes." And the implicit agreement there was, "And if it works out, you know, you'll take care of me," and we're now at this phase where there was 15 years that I toured all over the United States, all internationally and all that stuff. And that's very exciting. We've talked about the seductive quality of life on the road and about how you're constantly swinging from urgent thing to urgent thing. And you have the freedom of knowing that at any given moment, there's nothing you're supposed to do but that. And I'm now at the phase and I'm really wrestling with, yes, I'm going to support my wife. We're now at the part where the kids are going to preschool and Bonnie is going back into the studio because we finally are at the place where she can have the time to do it. And it feels really selfish and weird to sit around playing Hearthstone while I'm quote unquote watching the kids. It's impossible for me to do any actual full-on work because I'm watching the kids, and the reason I'm watching the kids is because I'm making it possible for my wife to follow her art career. But I It's hard. It's harder than I thought. You would think this would be the easiest thing in the world. Like, yeah, I'll watch the kids. I'll play Hearthstone and just hang around. But it's really, really hard to support a loved one and do kind of nothing in the meantime. And then it hits me that for 15 years, this is what Bonnie did for me. So anyway, that's the thing I'm wrestling with right now as a creative, is how to support someone at the beginning of their creative journey. Do you have any advice?
Well, financial support's good.
Well, I wish. You know what it is my old routine used to be that the hours from 8 until noon I would work out. But instead, it's like I'm kind of stuck at home and I don't know.
Are you saying that like motherhood has a lot of these responsibilities and reframes how you look at life and what you can do?
It's hard. It's hard. And you need to understand whenever you hear a mom talking about how hard mothering is, it's way hard. This is my first 6 months in the adventure of being a stay-at-home dad half the time. And it's really, really emotionally taxing and difficult and hard. So kudos to everyone who supports their loved ones. And if you are being supported by a loved one, figure out a way to make them feel appreciated, because it's hard.
I have absolutely no relevant thing to add to that, Brian.
That's a bummer. Okay. Sorry. Anyway,
it's heartfelt. It sounds. Yeah. You made a very good point.
There are no answers. I mean, I think like on a broader level, if the question is, you know, how do you be supportive, then, you know, there are a lot of like lessons to learn about like, you know, understanding what constructive criticism is and kind of listening and instead of speaking, immediately understanding where somebody wants to take their career or project and helping them achieve their goals as opposed to just sort of pitching a totally new idea. Like those are all, I think, good sort of ways to kind of be invested in somebody else's success as opposed to just sort of, you know, letting them know your idea for their career.
Well, and here's the challenging stuff is when you're on the road and you do a show and everyone stands up at the end and claps, you know you did a good show. And when they all line up afterwards to shake your hand and tell you did a good show, you feel it on a very visceral level. It was challenging once that got virtualized, because a bunch of people lining up to say, hey, I enjoyed your show is like, well, I guess I did good and I feel good. Whereas a bunch of emails in your inbox of people saying they like your channel starts to feel a little bit like work, right? And then now, even though I feel like I'm doing a very good thing and I am keeping our promise and I am doing my part to keep the family going and support the creation of Bonnie's art career, it is so quiet. Like, there's nothing to work with. There's no serotonin rush that comes from just being alone in the house. and yet, in many ways, this is the most important contribution I've made yet. This is the fulfillment of a 20-year promise of somebody who made it possible for me to go on the road. But it's so damn quiet. It's hard. It's really hard.
Dude, I just always invent projects, you know, and I don't know what you really can do when you have to watch after three other human beings who could set the house on fire at any time.
Yeah, dude. So. When you have a toddler, you're on constant suicide watch. It's just at any given moment they can run and grab a thing. At any rate, hats off to everyone who supports everyone, because that's a big deal.
Yeah, just a quick talk to my brother. He's got my oldest niece, Annie. She did a report on Dolly Parton. I told Brian this. She did a report on Dolly Parton. She's reading it to my brother. She's like, well, Dolly Parton, you know, she just mentioned where she was born. I said, she did movies. Like 9 to 5, the best little warhouse in Texas. And my brother says, yeah, it's one of those moments where I'm like, I'm not going to correct her because that's a conversation I don't want to have.
Well, and that's one of those, that's a good example. JC Calhoun in the chat is saying like, so is Brian actually alone or is he watching the kids? And the answer is both. It's like, kids don't need your full attention. They're not very good at chess and board games and anything that would have you fully engaged. So as I'm becoming a mom, you figure out kind of slow motion things to keep you mentally engaged. And if you're very, very lucky, slightly productive, but also free you up to have enough attention to be paid to them so that
they might just have their own projects. You know, like you're in the house, and if you're watching them, if I'm ever watching them, they're like, they've got plans, they've got things they're doing, and I don't need to invent things every now and then. But you know, they're at that age where they're just gonna, they've got a lot of activities, a lot of things going on, and you know, I'm just there to sort of, you know, make sure that, you know, water glasses get full and, you know, the messes are contained. But other than that, just, you know, they're not, you know, like, imagine your kids are the same way. They're able to entertain themselves. You just need to kind of be present, but not, you know, refereeing it. Oh, I was going to change the topic, please. I didn't interrupt.
No. Go. I was going to tell a quick vignette. I know you guys haven't seen Logan, but you guys are most certainly aware that it's about a middle-aged man who it was just in a slice of hilarious irony. When we went to Logan, it was one of the first nights that the kids are at an age where I'm like, I know when I was that age, I was taking care of my little brother and my parents would just go. And I'm like, you know, are we going to hire a babysitter? It's like, should we? It's like, okay, well, basically I was staying home alone with my brother at this age and I was being paid to babysit other people younger than our youngest at this age. Also, we have security cameras on, two cell phones, you know, like there was on the list of reasons, not any good reason that we couldn't just, you know, put him to bed and go see a movie. And then we go see a movie that is about what it means to find out you're a parent and take care of a daughter. And then meanwhile, Bonnie misses half of it because she keeps getting texts because my daughter got an Amber Alert on her phone, and her sister says, like, well, what's an Amber Alert? What does this mean? And then her sister says, oh, it just means there's a kidnapper out. You know? And so the parents are gone off. Dad is crying watching a movie about being a good parent. And
your children are terrified. I think they're in the middle of Home Alone.
Yes, yes.
Parenthood fail. I want to play a little bit of the weird things after things Shark Tank here.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, right on.
I'm going to pitch you an idea. You ready?
Oh, all right.
Be gentle.
Your mouth is.
All right. So here's the idea. Here's the challenge. Here's the problem. Now we're going to get sued. I have to do multiple things. Like, I have a book coming out on March 21st, brand new book, Black Fall. By the way, listen to the end of Weird Things and you'll get an audio clip for, you'll get the little audio part of that, little, you know, bit of that from there, the beginning of the book. And I have to promote my book. I have to do things on Twitter, have to tell people, hey, check it out, do that. I just launched over a month ago Illusion Double X, which is now shipping, by the way, as I'm getting in from the printer. I've been shipping them out, so I've been shipping this out and promoting that. And I've got another thing I'll probably be announcing tomorrow on my email list, a new magic effect. Anyhow, I always got to do that. And then there's like promoting Weird Things. There's promoting the podcast. There's promoting all these sorts of stuff. And there's a lot of having to talk and do this. And when you work with a publisher or a network, they'll have somebody sit down. They'll say, like, here's what you need to promote. Here's what you do. And they'll lay out a plan for you. And it's sometimes good. Sometimes you just take what you need, whatever. And I was thinking, like, man, if you set me in a down and you said, spend 3 days putting together a plan to launch a book and to do that, I could do that. You know, I could put together a pretty good promotional package. You know, the Illusion Double X, I'm pretty happy with what I've done. But I'm like, I just wished that if I had that plan, I had a system that would just be like, hey, today, do this thing. You know, like, go on Twitter, do this. Tomorrow, go get a Facebook ad for $20, get involved in the comments on your book or whatever you're doing, you know, and that'll help promote it and get people pulled into it. and then Wednesday, maybe do a Periscope, whatever. I wished, I said, if I could put together a plan and then have something every day, get an email that says do this, and sometimes have like my email tweets pre-written for me. Just tweet this. Just make it super simple so that I don't have to spend 20 minutes doing it. I can spend 2 minutes doing it. And so here's my pitch. And all I see is myself, so I assume you guys are still there. Here is my pitch. Is a service or a system that would make it very easy to put together campaigns that could either be like time, like I'm going to do this for the next 30 days, or a continuous one like, hey, I have a podcast I need to continuously promote and push out to people. Every day, send me a call to action to do. That's very simple. It might be just press a button to remind people to check out our archive. It might be like, hey, tell people like, oh, here's a cool thing that happened, blankety blank.
So that sounds pretty great. Specifically, like I'm already thinking of how to expand the idea. What if it was a timeline that accurately it asked you a couple of questions or you set some sliders as far as how big of a project you're doing, and then you set it to a certain level, and then it says, okay, what you're describing sounds like roughly – what this very successful company became. So, for example, let's say if you have a huge, huge idea, then you set the sliders such that it says, oh, you're trying to follow the model of PayPal launching. Well, what? When PayPal launched, by this point, they had these investors and blah, 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 blah. Go ahead.
Let me break it down even more for you, because like my plan is like assuming it's people like us, not people who have funded venture capital things and have, you know, $2 billion like PayPal did to buy people. Like to say, you could go in there and say, I've only got 100 Twitter followers. I've only got 20 people on email. I only have this, this, and this. What can I use this? How can I? And part of it would be like, it's on your point, absolutely, Brian. It'd say like, here's what we'll do. We'll look at what works for other things. This is what you need to do. And it's not, and it wouldn't be like, part of the idea is to say, hey, you're going to do a lot of social media, but we're going to make it fun. We're going to make it interesting. It's not just send a bunch of posts and forget about it. It's building quality of relationships. Because a problem I see a lot of times is like, yeah, I do a thing on Twitter and I don't get a response. It's like, and we talked about this before. It's like, how involved are you in the people who follow you?
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And that doesn't mean you need to be doing that every day, all day. But if you spend twice a week, you spend 20 minutes liking things and retweeting other people, when you ask for that favor, you are far more likely to get it. And it would be like that. And it might be like, hey, Monday, you know what? Go into Instagram and comment on some of your favorite photos you see other people do.
Yep. You know. So they're like mini quests. It's today, tell a secret that most people don't know about you or whatever. Because the problem is like there are some people who I look at their Twitter feeds and you could tell they're paralyzed because they don't want to screw up whatever they've got on social media. So they do the safe thing, which is just constantly mentioning their book and or product. And of course, nobody values any of that garbage at all. Nobody wants to hear about your email list. Nobody wants whatever. What they do want is they want to hear 9 different interesting factoid secrets, cool things you found online or whatever. And then the 10th point, you could say, oh, by the way, I have a book. Did you know about it? And then they will listen on that 10th time.
Or you know, you can tell the story of the book without plugging the book, right? You know, and I think that's another element to think about is like, all right, well, tweet today. Don't put the link for the book there or necessarily say it's a book, but just say while researching blank, I found interesting factoid, right? Or like I did this. Just find a way to bring in your audience. I mean, number one, as far as the idea goes, I think it's a very good one. And one that I think, you know, there's an idea that people who are successful in these fields are kind of like, you know, like, well, I have a feeling for my audience, you know, like I've got this magic connection. And it's like, yeah, there is some of that has to happen to do it without any like guide rails there. But there's no reason why there can't be guide rails. You know, there's no reason why there can't be a more fluid best practices.
Well, and plus also, like, if it just says like the game, number one, I love the idea of gamifying any of the structure of accomplishing day-to-day tasks. And it could be the kind of thing where it's like four times a day, where it just, you know, your phone bezabbles, which is a new word.
Well, that's the name of it, Brian. Bezabble.pizza.
Bezabble.pizza. Your phone buzzes and goes bzabble, and then you look and it says you just got a quest, and it says right now before you do anything else, do this, and then it's like you check did it, and then it's some time later it buzzes and says, hey, how many people did you respond to during that? And you give factual metrics of the level of engagement that you're getting. So on the one hand, you're reporting on your success and or failure, but then you're also giving valuable data on, you know, on the organic growth of individual projects.
Yeah. I certainly think, like, yeah, I think that in its simplest form, and what I've been working on right now is a system that would send, like, I would say, let me start just a general, like, hey, how do I improve my social media? And it's like, oh, every day, like, here's a thing you can do, you know, and understanding, because some people go away from social media because it gets to be very frustrating. I'm very happy with my relationship with it right now. I don't spend much time in Facebook because it's too much of a time suck. I like Twitter. I do that. I'll go into Facebook a little bit, but I don't get into Twitter and Instagram are my things. Facebook is just, to me, too much of a time sink, but I'll do a little bit there.
There's too much fidelity to Facebook because you can write a 300-word essay on Facebook. It is tempting to try to do that. The appeal of Twitter is that it is the magical bliss of inbox zero at all times, because it is impossible for me to write more than two lines in response to everyone. Everybody gets a response or some kind of appropriate handling.
It's like I talk to some people like, oh, like I'm like, well, I don't get upset by anything I read online because I don't go into Facebook. Right. And that Facebook seems to me like just the number one source for getting frustrated or angry for a lot of people, is because I am convinced of this, that their algorithms intentionally do that because they can agitate you. You're going to comment and you're going to respond, and then you're going to go back and check your response, and they're going to keep pulling you back in there.
Yes. I totally agree. Like, they do not care. They don't care what flavor of emotion you are feeling, as long as you are feeling an emotion and engaging for a certain number of user minutes on there.
Yeah. So it's an anger machine. So, but that's saying it can't be positive too. You know, that's a problem too. It's like, I've had these people, like, you know, there was a lot of stuff that happened to the Magic Castle. You know, we lost a great, you know, great magician and whatnot. And people are like, oh, didn't you see the latest on the Facebook page? I'm like, no, because every time I talk to people, they're bitching about the arguments on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, why do I go there? But that being said, is I think you can have a comfort relationship, and I'm still learning these ways. But so I was building a system for myself. But the simplest version would just be a way, like a daily email thing. It'd be like a free thing, like, here's what you can do. Then I would say, okay, are you a podcaster? Do you have a podcast you need to continuously promote? Then use this track. You know, are you a YouTuber? You need to do this track. And you could do multiple tracks, but to make it very easy to say and condense it, like we've talked about before, is like, not say, hey, go write a tweet about this. Like, here's what you told us. Here's a tweet that's pre-written that you can just click tweet.
Yeah.
And just be sure to go read people's responses. You know, don't be a sociopath.
That reminds me of the idea that I
don't be a sociopath. Pizza.
It's pretty good. There was that. Do we talk about my nutty idea of the 1 hour inbox, like some kind of restricted regime, like an app that is a plugin?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I believe we did.
All right. I didn't
hear about this, Brian.
Oh wait. Oh, maybe it wasn't on this show. I know we've talked about it.
Well, I postulated on Twitter. It would be great if because right now, you know, 4 hours of email a day and I'm still falling behind and nobody knows whether or not I read their thing or not. I would love it if email had a bit of restriction the way Twitter does, where it's like you could imagine a plugin for Gmail where you're able to monitor your emails as they come in all day, just like regular. If it's super urgent, you can respond right away. But when you sit down, it's like, okay, are you going to do your hour of email? You do an hour of email. And then once it's done, it's like, and you're done. And then anything that is left marked unread, because what happens is a lot of people ask deeper questions that require a little bit more thought, and I don't feel comfortable writing one line back, or it's an important decision or whatever. But what if at the end of the day, all of those vanished, they all incinerated, and they got an email back saying, hey, I don't know if you know, but the person you emailed, he's doing the 1 hour inbox. Your email did not get read today and was incinerated. Click here if you'd like it to be sent again. Click here if you'd like to write a new version of it. Click here if you want it to be sent next week. And then now the onus is on them, because if what they want is truly, because that's what we don't get with email, is any kind of sense of how serious someone is. Did they write a big, nasty, long email because they just wanted a cathartic experience? Or did they write it because this is truly the most important thing in their life? By kicking it back to them, like instead of it just sitting there in your inbox, it would automatically say, it would automatically kick it back to them. And so you would get the bliss of knowing that you did your hour. You're not expected to do more than that in a day. That's insane that the world thinks it is owed more than an hour of your time on email per day, or whatever that number is. Maybe it's 4 hours.
You did explain this, but yeah, now it's a little more detail on it. It's an interesting, how do we resolve these things? And I tend to sometimes kind of do my email every other day or something too. Like if I get in the middle of something, but it is that, like, my advice to everybody, write shorter emails. Cause I will be in the middle of doing, then I get the big long one. I'm like, all right, I'm done here. I can't respond to this while I'm waiting in line or whatever. And I'm not going to answer any more email, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, hell, I get long emails that are like stuff for jury and politics where it's like, it's meant to be read. And I'm like, and it'll come with like, sorry for the long email. And it's like, well, okay, it might as well be, please don't read this. Right?
Yeah.
Like it's hard. It's hard. It's hard for people to cut down what they want to say into something a little bit shorter.
So anyhow, my short-term solution is just to make it easier for those of us that are trying to promote stuff, whether it's podcasts or books or this or that, is to say, there's a lot of wisdom out there and a lot of advice about doing this stuff, but they seem to be written towards people who are paid to be marketing executives for companies. You know, they seem to be written for people who are put together for somebody who is paid full time to do this. And you have a lot of basic questions. It's like, you know, if you want to post an image as like an ad on Twitter, what should the dimensions be? You know,
yeah.
If you want to do a Facebook ad, like I've had really good success with, you know, my magic book ad on Facebook, and I've had people, magicians come to me like, oh man, I've seen your ad multiple times. I'm like, good, you know, that's the plan. And, you know, I spent several $100s on that ad, but I didn't spend a ridiculous amount of money. I just learned how to target magicians, demographic, and people I think would most likely want to buy it. And that's a thing that not everybody knows. I wouldn't do a Facebook ad. I mean, I might do a Facebook ad once for a book just so that everybody who knows me knows that I do something, but I wouldn't put a lot of money into it because I'll never see that money back. You know, for a book that's got a retail price of $80, it's different. But then, how do I promote, you know, how do I promote Blackfall? You know, how much time and energy can I spend doing this? And I've learned some things, and there are things that I talk to other people about doing. And how do you put that out there? How do you promote a podcast, et cetera?
I don't know if it's too talking out of school or not, but one of the things that you have an attitude that is, I think, a smart one, which is, you only want to buy exactly the number of ads that will reach the right number of people in service of selling your product. But Justin was talking about back in the early days of iTrix, he would get on the phone and he would try to, you know, solicit to people and explain the benefit of buying ads on iTrix versus conventional print media. And then they would go and they're like, well, I went to iTrix, I didn't see my ad. And Justin's like, well, yeah, because you're not, you know, number one, they rotate and they don't whatever. And it's like, you know, what they fell for the trap in the story that I heard that I'm now telling out of school. I apologize. They fell for the trap of what they were really buying. What they really wanted to buy was not actual increase of sales of their product. What they wanted was the prestige that comes from picking up a magazine and looking and seeing their name in print, which is a very different animal.
Yeah, and that's certainly a point. And, you know, I would like, magic ads are different because magic ads, you're really trying to spur word of mouth. We know it's a small little community. If I tell people here, other people tell other people. But if you're going to a broader audience, like with one of my fiction books, it's different. So we started doing sponsored ads on weird things where you could have a post, a sponsored post. So you could say, look, yeah, now I get it. There's my thing and all that. Because that was a problem doing the billboard ads. And billboards were, you know, we did them super cheap. But yeah, people would be like, where is it? It's like, you're in rotation with eight other people. We have thousands of people who come here a day. You know, if you want to buy us out, it's a different price, you know.
And also, if you're just refreshing, like, you know, which is what we would normally get, is just kind of explaining the basics of impressions to people who didn't know, you know, and it's not their fault, right? They're the people with the money. You kind of got to do what they want.
Yep. So I think that there's so much of it that can help people, but it's easy to just go spend a bunch of money on an advertising thing that won't work. And a campaign doesn't mean you have to spend money. And that's what I want to put together is like, hey, this is how you promote, get the word out. Tell me how many people you have and we'll work out an algorithm. We'll tell you how to build up your audience and how to increase the quality of your relationship with people on Twitter. Like things you should and should not do. Like when I go into Facebook and I see posted from Twitter from somebody, it's kind of like, well, F you, you're not here. You're just doing a drive-by, throwing this into the lawn. And
this
then
is
leaving.
An echo of something you shouted somewhere else. And it's like, why would I talk back to an echo?
Yeah, and there are people we know who do that, you know, who I see and I'm like, I don't think you realize that you're kind of leaving other people kind of cold, you know, when you do that. Because at some point, you know, they get a marketing person like, oh, you should. And I've had marketing people give me bad advice like, oh, you should do this or this because it works for so-and-so. I'm like, well, there's another part to that, you know. So,
Justin, I know you've had experience on the selling side of ads with iTrix. Have you on the production of Contender and stuff, have you bought any ads or targeted placement? Or
oh, sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, Facebook ads, I think for Andrew with Magic, there's a very defined place that you can go. There's a very defined group that's already active there. Many of which, you know, are even already friends with Andrew, you know, or at least a sizable amount enough to kind of get a targeted audience, and Facebook ads are great. We have not had a tremendous amount of success with the Contender, largely because the more that I've understood Facebook ads, you really need to kind of, you know, wildcat a little bit in terms of, you know, in the metaphor of oil drilling, you got to try a bunch of different places, and then hone in, hopefully based on your demographics that are coming into your website, advertise to the appropriate kind of demos. And then once that well is kind of identified, then the game is kind of min-maxing exactly how much you're going to pay for it so you can get it for the cheapest possible price. But, you know, we have experimented. It did not bear fruit for us particularly, but that's not to say that, you know, going forward with maybe a little bit of a cleaner balance sheet with the next game, we might not earmark a little bit more for advertising.
Did you try Amazon ads?
I've never
John
messed around
might
with that.
Have. He was really the ad guy. So I don't know for sure, but I do know that if it was tried, it was not successful enough to really even become a question on whether or not we'd go forward with it.
I flirted with it, but they have the minimum buy is like $100 buy. And I'm like, well, you know, do I want to, cause it's hard. Cause like you do 100 buy, it's like hard to experiment, you know, with that. I mean, I think you can go in and change it, whatever, but I think there's sort of, I wonder like, I'm like, no, I'm not going to go $100 or something that I don't know. And it's a book that I may not make that much in a month, you know, it's trying to sell it. So,
hey, I don't know if this is the same thing, but there is something inside. Once you have product on Amazon's multi-channel fulfillment, there are through there ways that you can do kind of sponsored listings and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that
I was talking about. Yeah, used.
Actually, John has been complimentary of those results.
Yeah, that's what I speak of. Yeah, that's an interesting area to try.
That's one area that I'm really feeling under servicing on there. Like it is flatly dumb that our original decks of cards, the Outlaws and the Arcana Alpha and Arcana Omega, aren't even in that marketplace just because it's just enough of a hurdle and we're doing well enough with it on their own site. It's like there's definitely money just laying out there that somebody is typing in, I want a Cowboy Wild West four cylinder motorcycle, you know, deck of cards. And right now they're seeing nothing. And because they don't want to leave the Amazon space, they're not buying them.
Yeah, and it's – I tell you, the dumb thing that I've had to realize is that, like, I did – you know, I did a Facebook ad that did really well, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm making, you know, $15 less per book based when I'm done. I'm like, yeah, but my profit margins are great, and it would make sense for me to continue doing this until it stops working. And I think that's one of the things is we know like, oh, if I do this thing, it would probably work, but I won't do it. And that's part of what I was trying to, my pitch to you guys is a system that's like, we'll do a lot of that thinking for you and make it very, very easy just to just press a button and do it. Because there's a lot of things that I've learned that would apply to other people. And we could take that across, say, hey, we've tried this system for podcasters to help them increase, you know, retainership or whatever, increase viewers. Now you can try this thing.
And yeah,
just apply that knowledge across the board. So
I'll tell you what, there might even that because you have identified something that I think is very, very relatable and good. I wonder if there, if you know, even beyond selling something, if there's a market just for like Twitter self-help, like just be a better citizen.
That's the core idea of this. The core idea is I actually registered prosocial.io. Was just the idea of how to be better, have a better online experience, you know? So yes, and you're recruited, both of you.
All right, done, in.
You're my coaches.
I'll tell you, like, I just love the idea of like, hey, review your tweets. Are all of them angry? Are all of them in response to people that you are questioning them?
Oh my God. Like there are people who I'm like, do they even know? Like there are people that out of politeness, you tolerate their feed, but every single one is shouting about for or against whatever president there is right now. And I'm like, is this really
theoretically,
guys,
is this really
is
who you are?
100%. The mainline purpose of this is that the how do you have a better interaction online of that? And if you're going negative, you always get negative.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I think that's something that I could definitely see becoming something that people want to talk about. And also it's just like, you know, hell, it's every couple of years that there's some major self-help thing. It makes sense that this would be another step forward, like in a world where we're so concerned
mindfulness
about
for social media
discourse.
Yeah.
Mindfulness for social media. Yeah.
Yep. 100%. 100%. That it started with how do you one was like, how do you simplify promoting and doing stuff? But then it's like, well, you be a better person online. And if you're throwing bombs and having an angry interaction, but if you learn how, as we talked about before, if you go in and like what people are doing, you're having a very pro, you know, in psychology, talk about pro-social. So I registered prosocial.io, which is the idea to get into like, how do you have, and then it's, then you don't feel like you're constantly marketing to people. You don't feel like you're constantly going, buy from me, buy from me, buy from me. And sometimes you will, when you're selling, some people will have that reaction. But if you, I've been loving my Periscope sessions, even when they turn into body shaming and people make fun of my hair. I have a great, very positive.
What's wrong with your hair?
People.
You look great. You have.
Thank you, Brian.
You have a rich head of dark hair.
Yeah, I have. It's like I have fun. I have not.
No, but seriously,
fun.
Let's talk about your hair some more. No, I'm sorry.
I really enjoy my online interactions because one thing is I never go negative. I almost never go negative. And I will sometimes delete tweets that might be borderline or people might perceive as something like I made a joke after my Periscope session. Why do all my Periscope sessions end in body shaming? And then some people are like, oh, well, people are bad or better. I'm like, nah, it was a joke, but I'm going to delete it because I don't want, you know, I don't want people feeling like they've got to defend me or whatever.
Man. That's interesting because my play is just a different play style than yours, the times, all of the most successful videos I have happen to also have the highest number of dislikes on them. Not that they're inherently disliked, but just that's how you know you're reaching outside your bubble is when you are saying something that somebody will disagree with.
Book reviews. Yeah. If I'm releasing a book to my own little bubble of people, I get wonderful response. Like right now, you know, Station Breaker has like 164 reviews. It's if you look at it, it looks like it's all 5-star. It's 4.5, but the average is so weighted towards 5 stars. It looks suspicious, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that once that book goes in front of an even larger audience that are like, well, what's this? Well, Amazon said I might like this. And then like this, Andrew Mayne's a dork. He's an idiot. Then that's when it goes outside of your core group is when other people who are I may never try to push it towards them, but when it gets put there, and that's what YouTube is. YouTube is absolutely that, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting because like I get sad when a video, and please, this is not an invitation to downvote any of the Modern Rogue episodes, but like I'm sad when I see that a Modern Rogue episode is almost universally beloved. It means I know that only people in the bubble saw it because, you know.
People in the bubble keep loving it because just.
Yes, please. If you're in the bubble, please upvote.
Yes.
Do we have picks?
Yeah.
Picks.
Oh, you know what? Right. I've got a pick. This is a quirky one. This is not something that's going to advance your business life in any way, but it will make you happy. It is hot and it's cold. And when it is cold, it's fine. But when it is hot, it is white hot on fire comedy. Hot damn, did I enjoy Michael Bolton's Big Sexy Valentine's Day special on Netflix. It is there are exactly three sketches. If you don't want to invest in the story is it reminds me of Kentucky Fried Movie and Amazon Women on the Moon, in that there's a thinly stitched together conceit to take you through a few different set pieces and sketches. But the Maya Rudolph sketch was funny. The Eric Andre sketch. Yeah. That one is so on fire because you could tell Michael Bolton is doing his very best to be professional and not just start laughing because it's clear he doesn't know what Eric Andre is going to do. It's way, way good. Very, very funny.
Yeah, hell of a pedigree on it. Directed by Akiva Schaffer of Lonely Island and Scott Aukerman.
Yeah.
Who Scott Aukerman wrote for Mr.
With,
Show.
With Bob and David. Oh, yeah. Or I'm sure he was in both, with Bob and David. Yeah. Right. Yeah,
I'm going to punt.
Punt. I'm going to pick.
The Modern Rogue is Andrew's pick.
Modern Rogue. Listen, if you're not watching The Modern Rogue, you don't deserve your eyeballs. You should have Roy Batty from Blade Runner pluck your eyeballs out of your head, set them on top of the little bubbling liquid nitrogen thing, and then squeeze them through the back of your skull because you shouldn't have been making replicants anyways because they're really actually people. Modern Rogue is my pick.
It's the best sales pitch ever. I love it.
And I'm reminded of this because last night I was watching Mazes and Monsters, the 1982 made-for-TV movie starring Tom Hanks. Warns us of the dangers of Dungeons and Dragons and only makes it seem that much cooler. And there's a poster for Blade Runner in the background.
So. That's amazing.
But Justin.
I'm going to pick... Bryce, was it you or Brant that put the GIF... Of Brian trying every face that Brian makes when he tries.
Yeah,
that was Brant. That was Brant. That's my pick. My pick is just that tweet. So somebody find
what is that again?
Tweet.
So it's on Twitter, twitter.com/gatawag. Oh, where is it? I hope he didn't delete it. Here we go.
I can't imagine why he would. He's not exactly.
Every single time Schwid tastes anything for the Modern Rogue. And
it's. Brian, your pick is Brian not knowing what to make of what he's drinking. The GIF.
It's so good. It's so good.
It's also so accurate. Everybody, once he started that meme, everybody started posting like, here he is with pickles. Here he is with stuff on Miracle Fruit.
You know, that's one of the signs of charisma is having noticeable, identifiable characteristics.
Yeah. That's very kind of you.
Absolutely. And also, if you are in the central New York area, everybody go check out the Daily Orange. Spent the weekend there talking to the kids, talking to the staff.
How did it go? Were you pleased?
Good kids all around. Yeah, no, they're serious, man. They're way more serious than I was back then.
They're switching majors now, Brian.
I know.
Dude, that's great. Congrats.
Gentlemen, thank you for all your help. It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.